You're listening to Dotto Tech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to Dotto Tech. I am Steve Dotto. We are ever so glad you are choosing to join us this fine Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening. Art Factor, how are you, sir?
It's with the light, and you can't really deny that it's evening. Maybe yeah. A few months ago.
Yeah.
You could call 6 o'clock afternoonish still.
It depends. I'm turning day into night now because I'm Joe Theater guy.
Yeah, so. you're the night guy, and I got to see you.
Yeah, you did. Now, you claimed to have come to see the show on Saturday night, but I have no personal evidence of that.
I tweeted a pic.
Of what?
Of the stage.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I put it on Facebook. I even tagged you in it. So that I wanted proof because I didn't want you to say, oh, well. So
are we Facebook friends? Because I didn't see that.
I don't remember you saying happy birthday to me. So
yeah, maybe. I did. I said happy birthday to you on air.
Oh, okay.
Which was awesome.
So radio friends, maybe not Facebook.
So did you enjoy what we're talking about, my show, which we're shamelessly self-promoting here?
Lend me a tenner.
Lend me a tenner, Metro Theater, 2 more weeks.
I would say the second best part about your show was the seats. Those seats are very comfortable.
Oh, the new seats. Yes, that is courtesy of the Aquilini Group. They donated all new theater seating to the Metro Theater this past summer.
Wow.
Yeah, that was nice of them.
Very comfortable.
Yes.
And so the comfort lent to a very enjoyable show.
Now, that can be a challenge, though, if the show is not up to par, because they're good snoozing seats. You know what I'm saying?
Dark lights.
But hopefully nobody fell asleep during our show.
No.
Yeah. And what was the best part of the show then?
You, absolutely.
Come on, are you kidding me?
You know,
what was the best part about me? That was really? Thank you.
Honestly, I think you were very entertaining.
We've got a balanced cast.
Nice to see you. You were just over the top.
It's an over-the-top farce, and it's funny, and I have a lot of fun. I yell a lot in it. Do you notice how much I yell?
I was surprised how you were able to keep your voice.
It's sore by the end of the night. If I'm not careful about concentrating on yelling technique, and there is a technique to yelling.
Diaphragm.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. But even so, it can be a little bit wearing by the end of the day. But yeah, it was a good night. We had fun with that audience. And it's too bad you didn't stick around afterwards in the bar, because that's one of the other great things about the Metro Theater is the bar upstairs afterwards. The cast all migrates up and you get to say hi to everybody.
Oh.
Which is next time.
Well, you didn't tell me about that bar. Maybe you didn't want me.
I did too.
I forgot to tell you that. Catherine Stewart.
Yes,
was an instructor of mine in radio school.
Cat plays the
sultry,
oversexed soprano.
Yes.
Who tries to sleep her way to the top.
Almost successful.
She was almost successful. Yeah, Kat's been in radio forever, and she was one of your instructors at BCIT.
Yeah, I was. It was a shocking surprise and an enjoyable surprise to see. I hadn't seen her in years.
Yeah, she still teaches radio at BCIT. She's kind of returning to her roots on stage, and she's a wonderful actress. She does a great job. I think she has the funniest scene of all in the second act when there's all the confusion with the Italian tenor, and she's going back and forth with him, and he thinks she's a prostitute, and she thinks that she's an opera singer. And,
well, we thought that in school, too.
Now, you can't go there.
No?
You thought she was an opera singer, right?
Right.
Good.
What did you think I was saying?
Art. You know, maybe we should get on with the show. We've got a great show lined up today. We're going to be talking with Julian Saunders a little bit later on in the show from London Drugs. He's going to be talking about smart pens. We have Mike Vardy talking about productivity stuff. And in studio with me, I've got Guy Steeves, who's going to be talking to us about some great awards that Small Business BC is putting on, and email marketing. And we also have Jay Cormier, who is in to talk about Wii U and gaming. Jay, because that's your thing. That's your
exciting.
Thing. Is it really that exciting? Oh, come on.
I drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. You're a grown man, and you yes. stood in line to get the Wii U, and you didn't get one. And you're like posted on Facebook, I'm so sad I didn't get my Wii U. I stood, despite standing in line for 4 hours in the rain.
Yes.
Where did you stand in line?
I went to a Superstore because I was a smart shopper. I went there and asked the day before, hey, you going to get any? And they're like, yeah, 4 of each. There's a deluxe version and a normal version. I'm like, great. So I went there early, was second person in line. And then by the time they open up, they're like, no, we don't have any left.
How could that be?
I have no idea.
Did you ask that?
I did, and so that's why.
Because that wouldn't happen at other fine shopping establishments.
No, such as like, I don't know, Best Buy or something like that.
Yeah.
But they were nice and put my name on a list. When they got some in, they called me and I came and picked it up.
And the next day, well, I got my Wii U. I'm setting it up right now. And then all of a sudden your Facebook page went dark because you were playing.
Yeah, I was busy.
Okay, so tell me what, now the Wii itself is the console game that all the gamers kind of poo-pooed, but everybody else bought.
Yeah, it was a humongous seller 6-7 years ago when it launched, because all of a sudden people could just pick up a remote and swing a tennis racket, and they got it immediately.
Yeah.
And so with this launch of the Wii U, so a W-I-I and then a space U, the letter U, is the new system. It's kind of a weird name for it because some people are thinking, oh, is it just a peripheral? Is it just this extra thing?
Or I keep thinking iTunes U, is it educational?
Yeah.
And I know it's not.
Yeah, like university. Yeah. It's not like that. Exactly. So there's a bit of a challenge there to figure out, is this a new system or not? It is a brand new system. It's the next generation, just like we went from Nintendo to Super Nintendo. It's the next generation of gaming. So new hardware inside it that can only play Wii U games, and it can do backwards compatible. It can play Wii games.
But it doesn't. You don't plug this into your Wii.
No.
Throw the Wii out and plug this in.
Yeah, yeah. You haven't thrown it out already, yeah.
Okay, well, you shouldn't have. That, now, that one. Here's one of the things. Now, the Wii U has a second screen built into it, though, right?
So one of the controllers has got like a tablet, like a little mini iPad-y type thing that you hold in your hands like a tablet,
And so that's so for things like, if you can imagine playing a football game, one of the challenges of playing football on a screen where you're sharing with your buddies is they can see you setting your defense as they're setting their offense.
Yes.
If you have fast enough eyes. Here you can do secret things, and I guess if you both have the Wii U, does it support multiple tablets?
It maybe in the future can, they've said, but currently it comes shipped with one, and there's no game that uses more than one.
Okay.
So it's currently just one person has that. The other players are just playing with the normal Wii remotes that still are work from your old Wii, so you don't have to throw those away.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but with the new one, the second screen, you're not going to be playing tennis with that. You're going to use the Wii remote for the other one.
Exactly. Well,
you don't want it flying out of your hand.
Exactly. The whole idea is this. It's called asynchronous play. So basically, I'm looking at something different on my screen, in my controller screen, and you or the rest of my family or friends are looking at the TV and they're seeing something different. And so some examples of that are one of them is called Luigi's Ghost Hunt in this game that comes with the system, the deluxe system. And one person plays as the ghost, and they see it on their tablet screen. They're walking around this mansion. They see everybody in the mansion, but everyone else is looking on the screen, on the TV screen, and they don't see me, the ghost.
Okay.
They have a little flashlight, and they're shining it. And if they catch you in the flashlight, then they'll catch the ghost. I'm trying to sneak up behind them and grab them, and they're trying to, communicate to each other. And like, I think he's over here in the top left.
Ah, okay. So that's a hide and seek type game.
That kind of game, yeah.
So how many games does it ship with?
So there's a basic version that ships with none for $299, and through $349, the deluxe edition, not only because it comes with four times as much internal memory, 32 gigabytes instead of 8, comes with Nintendo Land, which is 12 party games in one.
Okay.
Yeah. And it uses all of the old Nintendo franchises, all the characters, Metroids and Mario and all this stuff.
Good stuff. And how much does it cost? What was the price again?
$299 and $349.
And $349. And is this going to be... are we going to experience the Christmas shortage of this? Like when the first 2 years the Wii was out, there was massive shortage.
Yeah, you couldn't get it. So, I mean, obviously they're trying to replicate that, and currently it is out of stock. So the first shipment that came is, boom, it's gone already. So I guess we'll see. Once the reviews are coming out, for all the games so far are favorable. They're good to almost great. Mm-hmm. There's no, oh my God, system seller, everyone's got to buy this.
There's no Halo or Call
of
Duty. Yeah. Now, The issue, and you can correct me, as an outsider looking at the gaming world, I think that the biggest issue around the Nintendo Wii was people bought it, and then they didn't buy a lot of other games for it.
That's exactly right.
Because it came with that Wii Sports Pack, and we all like bowling, and we all like archery, and you played that. And then you might buy one or two more games. You get you the Mario Kart.
Yep.
And
a dance title.
And it's starting to slow down. I'm not buying a bunch. It's not like my Xbox. It's not like my PlayStation. And so do they call it attachment rate when people are buying multiple? And so the Wii didn't attract the good authors.
Yeah,
producing
it's
it. Is
true.
this, you think that this the U is going to have the same. And it's not that the console is bad and that people didn't get value out of buying the console. It's just that it became irrelevant faster.
Yeah, there was a problem with the fact that the only great games for the Wii are made by the first party publisher. So Nintendo themselves made great games, and they really understood how to use it. Everyone else just kind of did a waggle here and a jiggle there, and it was annoying. Mm-hmm. And so they all kind of failed because they didn't get it. So this time out, I think they've learned from that and from the 3DS launch, that portable Nintendo 3DS launch, where they didn't have good third-party support on that either. So they've come out and publicly said that they're really actually going after third-party support in this one. And Ubisoft stepped up to the plate, and they're launching with Assassin's Creed 3. They're launching with Zombie U, a game specifically created for the Wii U that's getting good reviews. And Rayman Legends, which I played all of these games, and they're really interesting use and taking advantage of this second screen.
When you hear Ubisoft coming out with a game for the Wii, does it have the look of the heavily textured map, the real world environment, or is it a cartoon environment?
Yeah, that's another challenge the Wii U is going to have, just because you see the Miis that you create in the Wii world, the thing that looks like you, that's a cartoon, and that's what you think of with Wii, and that's how kind of sometimes they advertise.
And I think of it as cartoony, whereas I think of Xbox 360 as realistic and PlayStation
so
as realistic.
The Wii U's processing power is better than the PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360.
For graphics?
It's better.
Shut up.
Well,
really?
I mean, it's 6 years newer.
Okay. Yeah.
Than either of those, right? So,
but it doesn't show.
Not yet, because no one's taking advantage of it. But you show Assassin's Creed 3 on an Xbox or a Wii U, and they'll look identical.
Okay.
Yeah,
so they,
or better.
So it is going to be an option for that.
Absolutely.
And that segues us into the other blockbusters for the Christmas season. Boy, has it been. You know, if you're going to be in one industry in the last couple of weeks, I would say that computer console gaming space is the space to be.
Well, it all started with Halo 4, which launched 24 hours, made $230
million.
Now,
$230
million. Yeah.
No movies make this much.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, absolutely. And that was like crazy blockbuster numbers. And then fast forward 2 weeks, and Call of Duty Black Ops 2 launches.
Blows it out of the water.
$500 million.
Almost $1 billion.
Yeah.
Console game sales.
Closer
to a billion than... Yeah.
Just from those two titles.
From two titles.
Yeah.
And
that's just the first... I mean, for sure, more than any other industry, even more than movies, video games is very front-end loaded as far as when people are going to buy them.
Yeah, you just buy it then, and it's a very short window. But that, you know, I can remember last time you were on with me, we were talking about what was the story with console gaming and how everybody was moving to these Facebook games.
iPad
and
games.
And crystal balls, you know, we've got them obviously, and they work about as well as real crystal balls, I think, you and I. But, you know, we were talking about the kind of, not necessarily the demise of console games, but the fact it was being usurped to a certain extent by these games from people like PopCan and Zynga.
Absolutely.
And at the same time as this is all happening, we see Zynga's stock, which went public, going from $8 or $10 a share, it's now down to $2 a share.
Well, not to get too opinion based, but I'm okay with that because Zynga is definitely known for kind of taking other popular games, copying them, and making them a teeny bit shinier.
Zynga's entire business model is irritate your friends and family so that we can make money.
Exactly. So that's starting to, people are starting to wise up to that.
Yeah.
But while the console market has definitely decreased year over year this year, so it's not as big and popular and selling as much. The digital download kind of games for iPads and phones and all this stuff is taking off like crazy. So gaming is up in general, mm-hmm. but it's shifting. It is shifting.
Now, with Christmas have we seen the biggest launches now with Wii U out and Call of Duty and Halo? Is that it? Going to be it
That's
for the
big,
hardcore
I mean,
gamers?
For hardcores, they're probably going to be looking for Far Cry 3. That's a graphical heavy one. That's
And Assassin's Creed, is that?
That's out already.
That's out already.
Assassin's Creed 3, yep.
Okay.
That's doing very well, yeah.
And so those are going to be the heavy hitters over Christmas.
That's going to be the heavy hitters. One that I would like to call out, because I think it's just an interesting model, is the Walking Dead video game. Have you heard of the TV show, I mean?
Yeah.
And so they made a video game, Telltale Games made a video game, and they're releasing it episodically. And so it comes out on your computer or an iPad, and you can download it. And you're up to episode 5, and it's a complete story now. And the reviews are out of this world. It's an amazing adventure tale.
The story arcs on these, in a lot of these games, as we see from the Halo franchise, they've managed to tell a pretty rich story to the point where, you know, is there a movie in it, or do you even need a movie? Because the story is being told. You know,
I think it's a rich medium for that kind of storytelling.
Now, I will ask you one last question.
Yeah.
Which is Xbox 360. How old is that now?
6 years? Seven years?
So what? And they released this new game that's doing so well on it.
Yeah.
But for people that don't have an Xbox 360, is it a good buy over Christmas?
Well, I mean, if you don't have one, I mean, and if you don't have a PlayStation 3,
and you want to play Halo,
nothing,
yeah.
You want to play Halo, yes, then yes. But, I mean, if you've never had one, then there's so many amazing games out there that you could get in the $9.99 bin.
Oh, yeah.
So that if you've never had one, it's a rich opportunity right now to go and get a bunch of awesome games.
And there, but this should be the last year for the 360, right?
That we're all thinking that. We're all thinking that next year's...
But we thought that last year, too.
We did. We thought it was going to be announced at least this year, and it wasn't. So we're assuming it's going to be announced next year. If they launch next year, that's a big, big deal.
Microsoft was really busy. They were doing this whole Windows, Surface thing. Surface and the area, Windows 7.
Windows 8.
And, Windows 8, whatever number they're up to. Yeah, you got it. And, of course, just changing away from having their office suite, putting that all online, and then firing their
couple things.
Windows guy. Yeah, they've had a busy year.
Yeah,
they've had a busy year. Jake Cormier, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get down to talking business when we come back with Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Welcoming into studio now, Guy Steeves. Now, Guy has been around in the business, I think, as long as me. Our paths have crossed occasionally in the past, but I don't think we ever met each other before, did we, Guy?
No, I don't think so.
Now, Guy is now, he is the Western Canadian Business Development Manager for Constant Contact, which we'll talk about in a few moments. Did I get your job title right?
Pretty close.
What did I get wrong?
It's okay. It doesn't matter if it's Director of Development or Development Director, either one, it works.
Man. It's a long title. It's just he's our Constant Contact guy. He's the Constant Contact god for the West Coast, but I want to start things off by talking. You have a wonderful relationship with Small Business BC. Constant Contact is a tool that pretty much every small business should know about. So you guys are in there constantly doing education with them, and you've partnered with them, or you're helping them out on an awards program that they have coming up called the Successful You Awards. So fill me in on what the awards are all about, first of all.
Sure. It's an annual award. There's 6 awards. Small Business BC is the primary sponsor. And last year I got on board and we sponsored a new award called the Best Online Marketer Award. So we look to acknowledge a sharp small business that's savvy online, that can run a good campaign in digital marketing. And we look for both email marketing and social media marketing.
I want to circle back to those things that you just said in a few moments, because I want to talk about what campaigns are and how people do that. And I know that a lot of that stuff folds into the way that your folks' software works. But I want to touch base a little bit more on what sort of companies should be applying for these awards, because it's not just all online markets. Certainly for your award, it's online markets. What are some of the other areas that the Successful You Awards are looking at?
There's Best New Company, Best Company to Work For. There's 6 altogether. The website you can go to is successfulyou.ca. And that's F-U-L, for those of you who don't spell that word very often. Or you could go to smallbusinessbc.ca. Either way, you'll find an opportunity for you to nominate yourself. Or,
which I love.
Yeah.
It's the only award I know. It's the only award show that I know that you get to nominate yourself for.
Or someone else can nominate you, which might feel better. But anyway, you've got to nominate or get nominated by November the 30th. So the days are running out.
Basically a week.
Yeah, a week. And the idea in the beginning is it's a popularity contest leveraging social media. So you need to go out there and tell everybody in your network and their friends and their dogs that you need to have someone come and vote for you to bring you from the applicants down to the top 10.
Okay. And the how large a business do they classify small business for this?
Well, by definition, a small business in Canada is 100 or less. Mm-hmm. In my particular online marketing award, we went 50 and less, just to make sure we keep the playing field from, one solopreneur to somebody who's 100.
Okay, so from 1 to 50 for as far as your award. So what are you looking for? And let's talk a little bit about the social the online campaign award. So are you looking for a company that's done? Are you looking for one outstanding example, primarily, of a social media campaign done well?
Well, the winner typically will be doing both permission-based email marketing and social media marketing because they work together so well. Mm-hmm. And it is one campaign quite often wins, but really we judge it over a 1 year time frame, and we look for the metrics of engagement and conversion and revenue and, you know, mailing list size, for example.
How do you determine what success looks like in social media? Because, I mean, does it just come down to a numbers of this many people engaging with a campaign, or does it come down to some other metric? I mean, that's to me always the challenge, you know, is finding where my success comes from when I go online and try something like that.
Yeah, you know, return on investment is difficult to measure in social media, especially in the early days. I always say that if you're not measuring, you're not marketing online. So we look for some criteria. We look for some performance. And it can be sales, of course, but people don't buy right away. So it is engagement. It's mailing list. How many people liked your page. More importantly, in how many people were engaged and shared, how many people commented. So those are all the means towards a good, successful campaign that's really going to drive relationships and grow your business.
And that's really the thing around social media, is knowing what success looks like for you as opposed to what success might look like for somebody else on the outside. You know, the bottom line is if you're getting your message out through social media, if you're engaging, we talk about engagement, if your customers are talking to you, if you're getting feedback, if you're reaching the market, if you're a savvy businessman and you are in a good market space, and you create those linkages to your customers, you're going to figure out a way to make money downstream. It doesn't necessarily have to be all there at once, but by showing them that you react to their communication, that you're interested in what they have to say, and that you're in a conversation with them as opposed to selling to them, that to me is where social media really steps up.
Yeah, social media is a conversation. Word of mouth is social media. We're just supercharging word of mouth using social media. There's 1 billion people on Facebook, your customers, your members, your clients, they're on Facebook. You need to figure out a way to be there. So we know that our customers' friends are our next best prospects. So online, if you're a small business organization, then it's your best bet for you to go out and try to grow your businesses, to use your customers as your sales army.
You've already convinced them. They've already bought from you. That's a powerful message, isn't it?
And it's soft sell online. I mean, people just don't believe a company talking about themselves like they listen to a perfect stranger or someone who's providing an online recommendation. It's where it's at these days in digital marketing.
So just to make sure that we put a button on the Successful You Awards, smallbusinessbc.ca or successfulyou.ca to nominate your companies in any of 6 different categories, but specifically, of course, on this show, we're interested in the online marketing. So go there and enter put your name in. Now, if you are a small business and you're interested in developing your chops in this area, that's really what this is all about as well, because that's what Small Business BC does, is they have this wonderful resource down in the Waterfront Station where you can go in, you can take different courses, you can talk to different advisors, there's libraries of books, there's all these resources to help the small business person develop skills in a variety of areas. And that's really what you do an awful lot of the time, is you're down there developing and delivering courses just on this exact topic of learning how to communicate through social media, learning how to build campaigns, which I think is a really important thing that we have to touch base on, is the fact that you're not just setting up a Facebook page. You have to have a campaign. So first of all, tell me about your courses and what's involved in your courses down there.
Okay, so I deliver probably on a monthly basis, maybe even more often, seminars, and they're best practices seminars. They're not product pushes, and they help the small business person be aware of the tools and the know-how and the education needed for them to go out really and get the word out, increase awareness, engagement. And I speak primarily on 2 areas, as I mentioned, permission-based email marketing, it's newsletters and more, and social media marketing with an emphasis on Facebook, because all things being equal, Steve, it is the sweet spot for small business.
Is it? More than LinkedIn?
More than LinkedIn, yeah.
Wow. Now, why is that?
Facebook is got, like I mentioned, 1 billion people on there with a personal profile. And it really is a mixture of a blog, events. If you were to Google yourself or your company, you're probably going to come up associated with Facebook because of search engine optimization.
Here's the question that I have, though, as a kind of to be a little bit of the devil's advocate on the Facebook. Because I believe that to do good business that you're probably going to get more benefit, more bang for the buck out of making an effort on Facebook. I agree with you there. But I wonder about the sensibilities of the average business person saying, Facebook to me is a place where I go for my personal time. And I go to LinkedIn for my business time. So business to business, LinkedIn seems to me to be the place that I'm more comfortable asking, talking to people about business. If you're my contact on LinkedIn, I'm happy to touch base with you and say, hey, guy, I've got this business idea that I want to talk to you about. If you're my friend on Facebook or friend of a friend, I feel a lot less likely to reach out in that way to say, hey, I've got a business idea you want to talk about. So am I missing the boat here with those preconceptions?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not alone. I think for what I can see for you, LinkedIn was probably the first social media platform you came on to, so you're used to that.
Actually, now, no, Facebook was.
Okay,
for me, yeah.
So Facebook, many people, because it's been around, the momentum is really around a Facebook personal page. There's 1
yes.
billion people there. So
yeah.
The transition over the last 2 or 3 years is really to have this this category of a Facebook business page, and that's where the education's coming with Facebook. It's their business model. It's their revenue model. And it's where you do business, because business is not supposed to be done in Facebook personal pages. As
no.
a matter of fact, there's been big pushback.
Yes.
So it really is designed to leverage your marketplace out there, because Facebook is asking people all these personal profile questions and business profile, and so you can target market on Facebook
yes.
as well.
Yeah, which we do. So you must have a massive educational responsibility then, because Facebook does a terrible job of communicating how to use their tools in these spaces. I mean, when I first set up my Dottotech Facebook page, I got to tell you, the overriding theme for me is confusion. You know, what is my personal one? What's my business one? You know, how do I reach out to people in my business one? How do I, using the two, having come from a personal side, I still, and I'm probably more literate than most, I still get confused when I'm in Facebook. Oh, I'm in my Dottotech account. Now I'm in my personal Steve Dotto account. And it gets really confusing. How much time do you spend just dispelling myths and having to convince people that it's not just about personal side?
Yeah, so Cost and Contact totally understands that confusion, and I've been confused as well, so I understand when I deliver to seminars. But we start with, you have to have a personal Facebook page in order to create a business page. And that's what we focus in on. And we have a website called socialquickstarter.com, designed for the small business person, that helps cut through all of the confusion. It's designed for the small business person, and it really only talks about marketing online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in general, I leave the selling up to the small business. We help them with the lathering, with the marketing, and
yeah.
that's what you do on the Facebook business page, and that's what you can learn on a site like socialquickstarter.com.
And one of the reasons I think it's a good idea to look to a firm like yours, like Constant Contact, to be your partner in this and to be the product that you use to lead in, is you guys have a great understanding of what permission is all about, because you've managed to carve out a niche in an area where spam is the rule, is de rigueur. But Constant Contact has a great name. Your email gets through clean because you have, from the beginning, said, no, we're going to be all about advertising, but it's permission. You give us permission to send you this information, and if you don't want this information sent, we give you a really good way to opt out of it. And so that permission-based email, I mean, that's the basis for, that's really almost a moral basis for advertising on the internet.
Yeah, it's the soft sell approach. I mean, spam has given email marketing a bad name. We're on the other side. We're fanatics about getting permission first, because it's then it's personal, relevant, and anticipated. If the email comes into your inbox, mine comes into your inbox, the first thing you see is who's it from, and you say, do I know them? Do I trust them? Mm-hmm. And then you move to the subject line. So email marketing is absolutely effective for small business to communicate, for tips, for discounts, for education, for how-tos. It's a way, because we still check our inbox in the morning. It's the mm-hmm. first thing we do.
And it's a way to maintain a relationship, because it's constantly reaching out, touching, letting you know that I'm still in business, I'm still interested in what's going on, and I'm still saying interesting things. It's crucial.
Absolutely. You keep in touch with people, and you're going to lose less of them, because retention is so important for small business.
Now, the one word that you've mentioned several times is campaigns. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the philosophy that everything you do has to leverage into something else? Is that you don't just have a standalone Facebook page, you don't have a standalone newsletter, but instead you make sure that one thing always folds into the other and has a relationship with the other part of your social media world?
Yes. Be one of those small businesses that, and I hate to use that word again, it's the integration between them. It's links between them. So your blog should promote your mailing list. Your mailing list should drive people to your Facebook page. So yeah, it's multi-channel marketing to make sure you're covering off where does your customer go? How do they want to find you? Because it's really about them, not about
you. Yes. Okay. And so your classes at Small Business BC, are they free?
They're always free. They're free this year. And a campaign, don't be afraid of that word. You don't have to have an advertising agency to help you with that. We'll help you set it up with a coach on the phone, set up a campaign on your Facebook business page that will engage your audiences and allow you to exchange something with them much beyond a like, which, by the way, is not enough. Mm-hmm. It's not engaging. And we'll give you the ability to create a campaign for a minimum of 7 days to 14 days. But it's really the focus of what you're doing at a given time frame to try to meet a call to action, if you will.
And that's what Constant Contact is doing now, is building a template that small businesses can plug their content into, which allows them to flow into all of these different places. And it's not that expensive to engage in, is it?
No, absolutely not. Cost isn't a factor. It starts at $15 or $20 a month for 500 contacts. And really, it's a time thing, and it's content strategy. It's really the key significant thing that most small businesses need to get a handle on.
And if you need proof, just think about the small businesses that are in constant touch with you in your inbox, and then take a look at the bottom of those emails and how often you're going to see that little Constant Contact button down there. It's a great place to start. And the fact that you're giving personal seminars where you can talk and you can answer people's questions on a monthly basis downtown Vancouver, I think that is just, that's great for businesses, great for small businesses. And I heartily endorse it. I think I've got to take it myself. My concern is I've already got this stupid Facebook page. If I've already done one and I've done it wrong, can I still fix it up?
Yes.
3 years ago?
Yes.
Okay.
You can fix it.
Okay. Well, we have to fix it. Art, we got some fixing to do. Guy Steves is my guest. We're going to get him back on to talk about email marketing again, because I find this a fascinating topic, as you can tell. Reminder, the Small Business BC is the site for the awards, or successful you, or of course constantcontact.com if you want to just go and take a look at the software that we were alluding to through this entire chat. Guy, thanks so much for spending time with me today.
Thanks very much, Steve.
We're going to take a quick break and return with more of Dottotech in just a few seconds.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Julian Saunders joins me now from London Drugs. How are you doing, Julian?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing just fine. Now, Christmas is coming, and, you know, for the last few years, I've been looking at these smart pens, the pens that basically memorize what you're writing. LiveScribe is kind of the leader in them, and they've got a new version out. Fill me in on what you think of these things.
The smart pens have had a lot of uses for people that don't really want to have a whole computer or even a tablet with them. The ones with apps give you a few more features, but LiveScribe has been the leader. They need special paper to work, just the way the technology is. But you can either buy the paper at the store for a very good price. It's not a inordinately expensive. Or you can even make your own paper. One of the things that I really like about all the LiveScribe pens is you can do things like have a calculator inside the pen just by drawing it out on your page. So there's a lot of different uses because it has apps that enable it.
Now, so let's describe the pen itself, because the pen and how it works. The pen is kind of a fat pen. It's not a nice, sleek little pen. It's a little bit thick, but that's because it actually has a. Does it optically track what's happening based on the grid that's on the paper?
That's right, yeah, and it even remembers which page you're on by the type of texture that it's picking up, so it uses a optical sensor that's actually similar technology to what's inside of infrared remotes.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a battery, it plugs in to a USB to charge, and it has a little screen on it, so it gives you a status of how full it is. And to also allow for voice recording. One that a lot of people love about the LiveScribe smart pens is it's also a voice recorder.
So you can record. So here's how I think a lot of people end up using it. I'm not positive, but this is how I think. You've got your LiveScribe pen and your notepad. You're in a meeting and you're making notes. If you have it turned on and you have the voice recorder turned on, sometimes when you look at your notes, you kind of wonder, what were we talking about when we were there? You can actually look at what was happening as you were writing and listen to it. But so you've got the paper version of your notes, but then when you get to your computer, you plug it back into your computer through the USB port, right? And it downloads the notes into your notepad. Basically, you have a digital notepad on your computer with the same notes as you had written down on your paper. Am I missing anything?
No, you've got it. So it syncs it up beautifully too. Once you sync it to your computer, you can easily share it through different online services like Evernote. And there's a new pen called the LiveScribe Sky.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sky Smart Pen has a Wi-Fi connection inside of it. So it'll actually sync to Evernote while you're writing.
That is cool. So the Evernote integration is important. So it's actually saving all of your notes to the cloud as you're writing them.
That's right. And you can have a shared notebook that you set up in a couple of clicks before you use your smart pen, fire it up, and then you can be sharing what you're handwriting while it's happening with anybody. So the idea is you can have your tablet or even your, say, smartphone with you, and you can be seeing your notes right there on the iPhone or tablet.
So other people can see the notes while you're doing it. So if you have an official meeting going on and there's a note taker in the meeting, everybody can see those notes as they're being written down.
That's right.
That is cool.
Yeah, and it works pretty slick. I've been testing it and on a busy wireless network with low bandwidth, it's actually very, very nice because it's only delayed by about 10 to 15 seconds.
That's pretty cool. And how much is the Sky Pen?
The Sky Pen starts at $129, and that's okay. A 4 gig version.
That's how much it'll store. So it's got all the capabilities. It's just, but it's 4 gigabytes of graphics is a lot. If you're recording audio, it's going to fill up fairly quickly.
Well, that's right.
Maybe
yeah.
Not that quickly. It won't fill up all that quickly. You've got quite a bit of time, I'd imagine.
Yeah, if you fill up a 250-page notebook with all handwriting, it'll consume less than a quarter of a gig.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have about 4 hours of recording plus 100 written pages before you have to worry about getting stuff off of it.
Now, there's also, they talk on their website about something called PenCast, which you can use this. I think this is similar to what you're talking about. But if you're a teacher doing notes or something like that, or you're brainstorming with your team, you can project what's coming off of your pen and the notes you're making onto a screen or a projector.
That's right. And that's not in the Sky series, but it is in the regular LiveScribe smart pens.
Okay.
And you can also have it transcribe what you're handwriting into typewritten words, just like you would use a keyboard if you have the right software. So there's a LiveScribe Pro Pack for $249,
mm-hmm.
And it will allow you to it'll type what you handwrite and do pen casts, which gives you some pretty amazing power. It records the pen strokes, so you see it as it came out of the pen.
Okay, so it's like it's animated, as opposed to the Evernote version with the smart pen, which is just going to appear. It's just going to appear periodically updated with all of the text, and it's not going to be animated in that way.
That's right, yeah. And it doesn't allow for other apps to be purchased and downloaded into the pen. The regular LiveScribe series unlocks a whole world of possibilities like voice translation. So you can handwrite in one language, tap your words, and the pen will speak back to you in a different one.
Get out of town.
Really, it's really fun, especially when you're learning a new language.
That is awesome. That would be perfect for traveling.
You got it, yeah. And you could handwrite back and forth from different... If you were handwriting in one of about 16 languages, there's an app that will actually detect the... you tell it the language, and then it'll detect the person's handwriting and speak back in English.
Oh, wow. That is cool. And that, but that's in the more expensive. That's in the Echo Smart Pen, which is about $249, is it?
That's for the Pro Pack, and that comes with noise-canceling headsets and the transcription software to type what you write.
Okay.
And then you have to purchase the translation software on top of that. It has its own app store inside of the software on your computer, mm-hmm. so you can there's a couple of hundred apps that the pen can run.
So it's the they've got the two models now: the Sky Pen, the Wi-Fi one, which sounds on the surface like it might do more, but it actually does a little bit less than the Echo Smart Pen. So the Sky Pen is kind of limited to make, it's really designed for people who want to make notes on Evernote and store them on the, in the cloud. And
right.
The Echo Smart Pen has all the additional apps and that sort of stuff. So I guess with the Sky Pen, the Sky version, you have to rely on Evernote's translation, graphics to text translation, as opposed to a dedicated app.
Yes, and you usually would use it for the immediate syncing over Wi-Fi because the Eco series has no Wi-Fi connection. It'll only sync with the computer once it's connected through USB.
Oh, okay. Well, how does the PenCast work then? Does it have to be connected by USB?
You record it first, and then you plug it in and create the PenCast.
Okay, got it. But it does it in real time, so if you are drawing and describing something, you can reanimate it.
Yeah, and you can move the audio around too, because it syncs the audio with where you've handwritten, and you can tweak that on a PenCast or overlay it with new audio.
Has to be some really interesting educational opportunities with this sort of technology.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of people that use them in boardrooms and other places where they kind of frown on bringing a computer in.
Okay.
So it has a lot of possibilities to make you more efficient.
And the one thing that people do have to be aware of is you do require special paper for it, because it does have to see the grid line so that it knows exactly where it is. And the notebooks actually have page navigation, things that you tap on it so that the pen can so you can add I guess index navigation to your notebook as it appears in digital form. And those books are available as bound, really nice notebooks, or as just loose sheets of paper. There's a lot of different ways to do that, and you're saying you can actually print off your own pages as well.
That's right, yeah, and printing your own little kind of scrap pages is the way I've seen a lot of people use it. They basically handwrite, sync it quickly, and then recycle the paper so they can keep notes on things while they're, say, walking around without a desk or anything to put the page down on.
Yeah.
So it can be very handy if you just need a few pages to make your own.
And they've got some really nice bound books, typical notebook type thing, arrangements as well, which are for people that do like to carry kind of a diary or a journal with them.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, there's a few different sizes and packages, so if you buy more, you save a little money.
Excellent. So that's LiveScribe. You can check them out at livescribe.com, or better yet, drop in your London Drugs where they've got them and you can take a look at a real one.
That's right.
Thank you, Julian.
Thanks, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me online now, as he does monthly, is Mike Vardy. Mike Vardy is our productivity expert here on Dottotech. He's the former editor at Lifehack, and former because you've started a new venture, Mike.
I have. I left Lifehack at the end of October. It was a great, great adventure while I was there, but I've started productivityist.com.
And that's spelled productivityist.
Yes.
Is that a real word, or did you make it up?
I made it up. I coined it. I was looking back at some of my old productivity parody stuff when I was doing eventualism back in the day, and I realized I coined it back in like 2010 when I did that book. So I just kind of took ownership of it, and I started talking about it more when I was doing the serious stuff, and then I defined it, released my manifesto, The Way of the Productivityist, and I was able to get productivityist.com, and thought, you know, it was time to reinvent my own personal blog, Vardy.me, and thought that this would be the great time and a great way to do it.
Well, we turn to you for things that make us more efficient, especially the online things that make us more efficient. I guess that's what a productivityist is we're the sort of people who, or they are the sort of people who try and use technology to be more efficient.
Yeah, we dive right in, and we basically, you know, we jump in and we get really enthusiastic about productivity. So that's the big thing that I like to do. And I mean, I tend to look at a lot of different methodologies and task management apps to try to, you know, try to get things done more efficiently and effectively.
So I'm visiting your site for the first time here now. It's a nice clean site, and it's going to be basically a blogging site, correct?
It's going to be mainly blogging. I mean, and there's going to be some news, though. Like, I've already reported a Dropbox and Asana integration happened last week, so that was a big thing. For a lot of people who want to share files and stuff with their teammates, that's been something that's been big. And just before this episode went to air, Awayfind, which is my email application of choice that kind of helps me manage my email and filter emails properly, they've announced some new stuff as well. So I'm going to be reporting productivity type news, which I think is something that will work well alongside some of the more, you know, esoteric and practical pieces that I'm going to be putting on the blog.
Let's talk a little bit about Asana to start, because I know that's a tool that you introduced me to first, and it's an interesting kind of task manager.
Yes, yes. I mean, the nice thing about Asana is that it's got a lot of power behind it. It really, it's a collaborative task management tool and a project management tool to boot. It's free for up to 30 people. They've also managed to bring the email into the program with Asana Inbox, so that you really can just open Asana to start your day. And anything that's associated with a workspace or a project or a task gets filtered to the appropriate Asana Inbox. And then this past week, they announced integration with Dropbox, which will allow you to kind of have your Dropbox files synced up inside Asana, so you can have context with them. You can manage your files from a single location, so kind of like with the email. And then the attached files are always up to date. So it's kind of like you can share these files back and forth, and you're not going to be losing any time or really any sleep over wondering where they are, where you're at with them.
I want to circle back a bit on Asana and talk a little bit about what this sort of a task management tool does at the heart of it, because it's very different for most of us who haven't used a Web 2.0 task manager. It works pretty well for an individual, but really works well in a small group area. So this is more than just making a list of all of your tasks that you have to do and then checking them off. It's more than just a list manager. It's really a management system that allows you to assign tasks, to track them, and to work within a team and team environment much more effectively.
Absolutely. I've been using it for several teams that I've been working with online. Lifehack uses it, and I know that I've been using it with another partner on a project of mine, and for my own podcast, I use it with my co-host as well, so we can see who's done what and where. And they've also have subtasks in there now, which is pretty huge, so you can actually have a bigger task that's composed of smaller tasks as well. So, for example, before we had this discussion today, I went in and said, okay, well, what things might we want to talk about? So the task was really have a discussion with Steve, and then I list about four or five things that we might want to talk about in the subtasks area. So, I mean, you can use it both for personal management, but you're right, it's major major uses in a team and collaborative environment.
And because it's free up to 30 people, it can work for a fairly substantial team.
Right, and the other great thing about it, it's web-based. They have an iOS app as well. But the thing about being web-based is that there's not really a lot of task management tools for Windows users that are, you know, that are as good-looking as Asana is.
Isn't that interesting how the Mac community seems to be much more engaged with the task management, project management type tools than is the Windows community?
It's true, and it's interesting because I've been that's one of my goals with productivities.com is to dive in a little bit more into the Android realm, into the PC realm, the Windows realm, you know, those areas, because I think that's an area that needs more coverage. Actually, I took a bit of heat for an article I did on the Next Web this past week on workflow enhancement apps that kind of allow you to you can integrate them into your workflow, so they're not necessarily task managers, mm-hmm. but they will allow you to, you know, work more efficiently and effectively. And they were all either web-based or iOS apps. None of them were Android, and they're like, "Where's the Android love?" You know, and so it was very, it was evident to me that look, you know, there are a lot of apps out there for different platforms. But you're right, the majority of them they look really, really good on the Mac and iOS platforms. And not only that, but you know, with iCloud, you know, syncing and the fact that they've got just a lot of traction. They tend to get most of the notice.
Mm-hmm. Now, so one of the things that I like about Asana, if people haven't checked it out though, is the email integration that you were talking about a little bit earlier. Now, the way that I use it is I have email. I can send email to different Asana inboxes. One of the things I've always found weak on the Mac is integrating my mail with my to-do list. If you use Outlook, you can just grab an email, drag it into the calendar, and it becomes basically a to-do item or a calendar item. I've always missed that on the Mac. But Asana allows me to kind of work my way around that by taking things in mail and then forwarding them into the Asana mailbox, and they become an item within that project.
Absolutely. And the other thing about having Asana inbox is you can turn off email notifications when you get tasks assigned to you. So, for example, I don't have any email notifications for any of the projects I'm working on with Teams because I just go to Asana and check the Asana inbox, and anything that shows up that's assigned to me will be there, or any activity that's gone on within a task that I'm following will be there as well. So it's great that you can kind of just get out of your inbox and work on the things that really need doing rather than spend your time in email moving and managing things around. So, and there's another, I mean, there. Speaking of PC-type apps or apps that may be able to get some traction on the web and with Windows users, iQtel is another one that's come around too that has Evernote integration with it, which is really great. So you can basically suck all your Evernote data into iQtel, but it has email built right in as well, and you can link those to projects and to tasks and to a whole bunch of things. It's really powerful, and it's still in beta, but a lot of people are starting to jump into it because it really carries a lot of the sort of GTD tenants under one umbrella. So we're seeing more and more of these apps. And I think Asana's kind of leading the charge in terms of, trying to bring people into one place so they can do everything that they need to do.
Now, we've talked about two really good task managers that do things quite a bit differently, and there's at least a dozen more out there. How does the average person avoid the pursuit of productivity getting in the way of getting things done?
Well, I think one of the things that you have to keep in mind is that with trying productivity systems and apps and so on and so forth, and I've got a post that actually went up this week called Personal Productivity, it's a very personal choice. I think a lot of what happens is you get stuck using a system that you either were trained to use or are, you know, coerced into using by your employers or whatnot. And I think that it can hamper your productivity, just as experimenting and tinkering with a bunch of apps. I mean, not everybody does what I do and can dive in and dive out pretty easily. So the suggestion I always have is to, you know, look around, look at sites like mine and other sites like Lifehacker and Lifehack and those and get a sense of what other productivity apps are out there and give it a try for 30 days. And that's the thing is I think you need to, it's like building a habit. You need to stick with it. And at that point in time, you can kind of figure out, you know, what is going to work for you and what isn't going to work for you.
And I think the key skill to develop is the workarounds, because no single app is ever going to do everything for everybody. And so figuring out and being flexible with the workarounds, understanding how you can plug Evernote in where you're missing something, or how you can plug Dropbox in where you're missing something, some feature or function within your system that you've put in place, filling in those gaps by using some of the other Web 2.0 tools, I think it's really an important thing to consider, because if not, you're going to be dropping the app completely and you're going to be going to a whole different system. And then you've got another, if you say it's a 30-day cycle, whatever it's going to be, you've got another whole cycle of getting up to speed, learning the tricks, learning the capabilities of the system.
Well, that's how Eventualism got started. I kept trying system after system after system, not giving enough of a chance to any of them. And I ended up getting really good at learning how to be productive, but was no more productive than I was when I started. So yeah, you run the risk. And the thing is that the great thing about the evolution of these apps and with iOS and mobile coming into play is that these apps are very flexible. They're very malleable. So, I mean, if you want to use David Allen's GTD system, if you want to use Behance's action method, if you want to use even a hybrid of any of the systems that you want to undertake for being more productive, things like Evernote and Asana and OmniFocus and iQtel, and they are very flexible and allow you to use whatever system that you want to use that will, so that you can, you know, get things done.
If you are interested in being a more productive sort, productivityist.com is Mike Vardy's site. So what do you have coming up in the next week or so, Mike?
Well, I've got some stuff coming up with regards to, again, talking more about personal productivity. Setting up versus setting aside is another one I'm working on. I've got how you can get things done and still have fun doing it. And I've got a couple of, you know, product reviews I'm going to be looking at, as well as the new Evernote. So
yeah, the new Evernote should be – that should be – that's obviously – for me, it's become the kind of the flagship app in the productivity space. It
could the Mac and iOS version just went over a complete overhaul, so it bears looking at once again.
I'll have to do a new video on it too, I guess. Mike Vardy at productivityist.com. The link, of course, will be on our website. He comes on about once a month to chat about all things productivity. Hey, Mike, have a really productive month, eh?
Great. Thanks a lot, Steve. Great talking to you.
Good talking to you.
And with that, Art, it looks like we've almost reached the end of the show today.
It just flew by.
It does when you have quality guests. Yeah. Now, we didn't mention through the entire show that we're, of course, giving away a Sonos music system. If you drop by the website at dottotech.com, you can enter there to win a Sonos music system, which includes a bridge and the Sonos Play 3 speaker. I've got mine set up now for a couple of weeks at home, and I got to tell you, just love it.
I might buy one of those this Black Friday.
Oh yeah, you should check out to see if there's any good prices on it, because it's not the cheapest stuff in the world, which is great because it's a giveaway on our site, but it's worth it. And you know, it was interesting last week on the App Wednesday, you mentioned Songza, and Songza subscription is included in Sonos, and I thought I'd be playing my playlists from home all the time.
No,
because I've got this fantastic collection of songs. I've got a huge collection of songs. Haven't touched it. It's the Songza playlists. We got it on when going to bed at night. You say turn off in 2 hours, falling asleep music. We got this beautiful playlist playing all this acoustic stuff, falling asleep, and getting up in the morning. You've got a morning playlist. Well, we still listen to CBC in the morning, but and then during the day, it's housework or cooking or working out. I don't actually listen to the working out one, that would be silly, but it's but it's all of this stuff. It's this, come by the website, enter to win the song. It's the Sonos. It's an awesome system. And if you're in the Vancouver area this week, where should you come?
The Metro Theater
down on the foot of Granville Street for Lend Me a Tenor, a rib tickling comedy with me in it and Ryan Mooney and a bunch of other people. It's an
Catherine
awesome
Catherine Stewart.
That's right. Art Factor endorsed.
Absolutely. This message is approved by Art Factor.
I am Art Factor, and I do approve of this message. I am Steve Dotto, and I approve of this show that we've just produced for you. I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.